our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
But let's talk BJs. Blue Jays, don't get your mind out of the gutter.
I think that's going to make the intro right there.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Oh, I doubt that'll be Evan's only ADD moment, but that's what we've come to love him for, so we're all good with that.
I do as well. I totally agree. He's going to have at least one more.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I always say that my fantasy teams are kind of like my love life, where I want to sneak in the back door and come in first, so everything is going right on schedule.
You're a sick individual, you know that.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome into the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brennis. I am joined tonight by Chuck Anderson. How are you doing tonight, Chuck?
I am excellent. Thames continues to hammer. I am excellent.
That's good. Anything else going on with you, Chuck? How's everything else? How's your fantasy season going so far outside of Thames killing it?
Well, my fantasy season has had teams that have been swamped by injuries, and I've had a lot of bad luck with closers. So I'm just kind of I bounced off the bottom in a couple leagues, and I'm trying to see how far back up towards the top I can get. But other than that, I don't really have any complaints. It's always a lot of fun, and I embrace the luck, and that's one of my themes. I've been doing an article on the site every week, and that's one of my themes is that, you know, embrace the fact that there's some luck involved. It's just the way it is. Wins, saves, closers, you know, pitching performance in general, there's some luck involved. You got to ride with it, put yourself in good positions, and hope that you turn out all right in the end. It's just the way it is.
How's that NFBC team going? You still have half your roster on the DL?
Well, I got Martin Prado back this week, and he seems to be playing like Martin Prado right away, so that's kind of good. And I also have Trey Turner's back already. So, you know, a lot of them, Kemp is back. So I'm down to in the, you know, 8 to 9 people on the DL sort of area. But I still had really bad luck with closers in that league, so I got to hope there's some things to break right. I'm ready for the rumored trade of Robertson to the Nationals. That could go through right away for me, and then I could get some Nate Jones love. But it is what it is.
All right. We're also joined tonight by Evan Peterson. How are you doing tonight, Evan?
You forgot my name, man.
I got my podcast mixed up. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I mean, you gave me enough time to calm down from the fluster that I caught from all the Eric Thames talk we did before we fired this guy up. So I appreciate you giving me that time to cool off.
Well, I'm glad. How's your fantasy teams going this year?
Everything's going all right. I'm not panicking too much on a few slow starts. And I always say that my fantasy teams are kind of like my love life, where I want to sneak in the back door and come in first. So everything is going right on schedule.
You're a sick individual. You know that?
I didn't even get a laugh. Come on, Ben. I'm trying to make you smile. I know you've had a rough weekend?
I didn't have a rough weekend. I'm fine.
Well, how's your fantasy season going?
You know, it's not going bad, other than the fact I keep forgetting to place fab claims in on Sundays, so I haven't really got to do anything on Sundays, unfortunately. I keep forgetting that they run at 8 o'clock at night. Outside of that, the teams are doing okay. You know, I've had a lot of injuries. This 10-day DL is good and bad for the fact that, you know, the guys will actually be closer to getting healthy rather than trying to push themselves and being day-to-day. We can actually go and DL them, but for the fact that people can end up on the DL so easily, it kind of sucks for that aspect. So that's kind of hurt my fantasy team this year, but it's going well overall. Evan, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached?
At EvFWFB, you can follow my random train of thought as I watch baseball games and tweet about random life events. I watched Blank Check this weekend. It was phenomenal. If you haven't done so in the past 20 years since it came out, highly recommend you stream it on Netflix. And that may be the only ADD moment I have all podcast.
And what about you, Chuck?
Well, I doubt that'll be Evan's only ADD moment, but that's what we've come to love him for, so we're all good with that.
I do as well. I totally agree. He's going to have at least one more.
Yeah, at least, which is fine. Everything is, you know, I can be reached at Just Chucking It. And if you're looking for a boring follow, you don't want to follow me because, in case you don't know me at all or haven't listened, I have plenty of controversial opinions and they flow rapidly out on Twitter. So I start a lot of discussions. I take a lot of questions. So feel free to follow me. I think you'll enjoy it.
And I am at BBrandsFWFB. Guys, why don't we just jump right in? And we're going to talk about one of the big topics that was brought up in the staff league chat this past week. And that's going to be what happens when you're trying to trade a stud player. So why don't we let Evan take it, as he was the one who actually completed a trade for a stud player or traded away a stud player.
Right, right.
So why don't we just let you kind of give an idea of what type of trade it was, and then we'll all give our take on what it's like to try to trade for a stud player, and if you're the owner of the stud player, how what's going through your mind exactly. So Evan, start us off.
Absolutely. Well, you would have thought that I just did the most horrific thing in the world making a trade like this, and I'm not trying to make it about this particular trade. I want to look at the greater idea, but I traded Paul Goldschmidt for AJ Pollock, Gene Segura, and Aroldis Chapman in a head-to-head categories league that's K per nine. Doesn't have corner or middle infield spots, only three outfielders, a couple util spots. And the thing I was thinking about in presenting this as a larger topic is with this 10-day DL where there's a lot more flow of players going around, you know, trading for a little bit of depth in, you know, one of these big guys could go down at any point in time. I think in this scenario, it's really contextual that my team sucks. And I was starting, you know, like Jock Peterson, who just went on the 10-day DL. I was deciding between Jonathan Scope and Neil Walker at second base. And now I can play Segura when he comes back on Tuesday. I had picked up Ryan Zimmerman, who's been red hot, and Ben had some player raider trivia for me and Chuck prior to the show starting, but he's been really good. And so I felt I was able to pick up my spots and you know, help myself in a couple categories for, like I said, one of those backdoor playoff runs. But I think it's one of those things that, you know, people get really nervous about trading a stud. Am I getting enough for him? Or, you know, and offering a trade for a big stud, am I offering enough for him? I don't want to, you know, piss the owner off, think that I'm trying to lowball him. So I was just kind of curious what your guys' thoughts were on this topic. We'll start with Chuck.
Well, for most trades, as an overview, I always like to say that whoever gets the best player, the biggest star in the deal, usually wins. I do think there's exceptions. That this is not usually the time of year that I would be willing to trade away one of my studs. If I feel really stacked in an area in, you know, a couple different categories and I want to make a push in other categories that I think will cinch the league for me, then around the trade deadline time, you can definitely find me being willing to trade a big name. This time during the year, you won't get me to trade a big name. And you can get me to make offers for big names, but I follow the old by-the-book rule. Whoever gets the best player usually wins the trade. That's how I generally see trading overall. That's the dumbed-down version. Trading for dummies 101, if you will.
Real quick, just not to interject, and then I'll throw it to you, Ben, is I kind of look at it like a math equation where if you have a 2-for-1, it's like, well, what is the difference between, you know, like we were talking Eric Thames trades and like the difference between Josh Donaldson and Eric Thames is what player? And that's kind of how I like to view trading scenarios. So, Ben, do you have thoughts on that?
I mean, for me, I'm kind of in the same boat as Chuck. I prefer to always get the better player, even if it means that I have to give up sometimes a little bit more in terms of depth and then trying to figure it out. I have no issues trying to go for a Stars and Scrubs type team rather than have a bunch of good to decent players on my team. I'd rather have a bunch of stars and then try to fill up the rest of the positions with waiver wire players and hope that you get one or two that hit, and then just kind of rely on the overall knowledge that you have of the game and how much you pay attention to try to maximize where you can get value out of other people. So I have no issues with the trade, as I had stated earlier this week, but I can also understand trying to keep Goldschmidt and having the two extra players that you would have had in the deal, essentially, or the, you know, if you're trading away three players and you're getting one back, the other two players that you're picking up, who are they? You know, like in your league, you were stating that it's a 12-team league, so who's on the waiver wire? If the two players on the waiver wire are somewhat decent and competent, and you pair them with Goldschmidt, then the deal becomes less favorable, or if you're getting some other player, you know, say you're trading Chris Sale, or trading for Chris Sale, and you trade, say, like a Jacob deGrom and another mid-round piece, say, like, I don't know, Jake Lamb or something like that. Is the player that you're picking up with Chris Sale going to be more efficient than the other two pieces? You always have to take that into effect. So while you say, what does it take for me to get Josh Donaldson if I have Eric Thames and someone else, you can also look at it the other way. What do I need to add from the waiver wire to have Josh Donaldson be better in return with this waiver wire player than what I'm giving up in Eric Thames and player X? So it can go both ways.
And the other side of kind of what you're talking about, I think on my end, is the, like I said, the guys that I'm upgrading. Like, I don't have to, you know, once Segura comes back, I don't have to decide between Scope and Neil Walker anymore. Like, I can just have that decision made. So kind of the delta there makes a difference for me. Like I said, Jock Peterson on the 10-day DL. So I think that's also something that has to be taken into consideration as well.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that the easiest sport to kind of trade a stud player at in a daily type of transaction league, because there's, you know, baseball and basketball are the two biggest daily transaction leagues. You got hockey, but that's different due to the amount of time that players are on the ice and such. But I feel that in baseball, it's a little easier to trade a stud player than in basketball, where the studs literally have everything revolve around them. But that's how I would used to do a lot of baseball and basketball trades. If I had someone who was coming off the DL and I knew I needed to create a roster spot anyway, I would always try to do a 2-for-1 and get a marginal upgrade on the best player I was giving up for my team. I just try to get a marginal upgrade, because it's better than dropping a player who could be either decent, or even if they're bad, you still get an upgrade and you're going to drop that player regardless of what happened. So in your case, you being able to get VR back is a benefit to you, but, you know, it really
Segura.
Segura. It just depends on the situation.
Well, and it depends on valuation, too, because, I mean, there's a difference between, like, trading an established stud like Paul Goldschmidt and then, you know, like we were talking, not to keep bringing up Eric Thames, but, like, we were going over these stats and they just made me so happy. But, like, evaluating studs that are coming out, or a guy like one dude was trying to pimp me, a Eugenio Suarez, saying, oh, if you had took the name off it, you know, 25-year-old guy having a huge breakout, going to hit 30 home runs in Cincinnati, you know, how do you value those guys, I think, is also an interesting point at this season, too.
Yeah, I agree. What are your thoughts, Chuck? Do you have anything else to add?
No, I think, you know, the way that you guys framed it is a more in-depth look at it. But I still, I go back to my mainstay on it for one reason, that this early in the season, you know, like you're talking about, one of the guys that you got thrown in was Aroldis Chapman, which obviously he's an elite closer. But generally speaking, when it comes to closers, you know, like going into the season, we thought Mark Melancon was an elite closer. Now, you know, later on, we can talk about this again when we talk about the Giants. But now all of a sudden, how much value does Mark Melancon really have with his team situation, et cetera? And you not have not only that, but you also have, you can go to the waiver wire now, and maybe from here on out, from the day he was named closer, maybe Matt Bush is a top 7 or 8 closer.
That's, he's owned in that league.
Well, I'm sure he is, yeah. But I'm just saying that people that are getting the closing job right now? What is necessarily the difference in save total between Matt Bush from here on out and Aroldis Chapman? And to me, that's why still whoever gets the best player generally wins the trade, because there's so much transition still going this early in the season on what's going to happen on the waiver wire. We talked about Ryan Zimmerman. Ryan Zimmerman, a top five first baseman right now. I mean, no one even dreamt of that. And so there's still gold to be mined on the free agent market. So Paul Goldschmidt versus the people that you got, I agree to a certain level with the criticism, because Goldschmidt and the potential that there is on the waiver wire to me is probably worth more than Pollock and Pollock and the rest of the deal that came back to you.
I guess the part of it would have to be my personal valuations on Pollock and Segura, and that's the thing, is valuations are gonna change from person to person. As far as Chapman's concerned, real quick, K9 League, Giles, Neris, Benoit doing that little dance right there. And if I miss the playoffs, I can ship Chapman off and pump up his name value for something bigger than, you know, whatever RP piece I pick up now. So,
and that's the thing, you know, when you trade a stud this early in the season, you have the ability to, whomever you're getting potentially is able to develop a lot more value. You know, Chapman's value isn't going to go significantly down because he's a big K per nine guy. The Yankees are still going to get saves because their offense is great, but their pitching...
They've been good!
Well, that's the thing. Their offense is good, but their pitching can be bad at times, and they'll keep them in close games potentially. So Chapman will end up getting saves. You don't know that that's you're getting Segura, and you have no idea how he's going to do, but we project that he's going to have a good rest of the season. And the same thing with Pollock. But you have the ability to go and flip those guys because they are stud-type players, and you can end up going and being able to turn the value if they end up doing even better. You may be able to get replacement value that's closer to Goldschmidt if you like trade two of those type of players and get one Goldschmidt type player back without even having to move Chapman. So it really just depends on how the rest of the season plays out. But that's the beauty of doing a trade this early in the season. There's so much projection left that so many things can happen that you could end up making a better deal down the road.
I agree.
Why don't we move into the next topic? And we're going to be focusing on a couple of teams that have not got off to great starts in the real MLB standings, and what it does for some of the better players and even some of the fringier players for fantasy owners. So why don't we start off with the San Francisco Giants, and we'll talk about a few players that we're going to be focusing on and what it does for their value for you as of right now, and if this is someone that you may potentially look to trade down the road if things don't improve for the actual MLB team. So why don't we start with you, Evan?
I thought Chuck was going to do the Giants.
Why don't we start with you, Chuck?
Well, I guess we could do this just like a round table is what I was thinking. And the first thing that I want to mention is I do find the Madison Bumgarner injury to have interesting effects on other areas of the team. Like I mentioned, I think Mark Melancon gets his value really dinged from, you know, having the lesser pitching and having the lesser win total likely for the team throughout the season. But a more interesting guy that I want to get your guys' take on is what do you think this does for Johnny Cueto? Do you think his value stays exactly the same? Do you think, there's a chance that, you know, if the team goes down, then maybe he's not going to have as many wins as he did before? Would you be looking to acquire Cueto right now, or would you be looking to get rid of Cueto if you owned him? I think he's an interesting person in the stuff that's happened to the Giants so far. What do you think, Evan? How do you feel about Cueto now?
Well, I know from owning Cueto in one spot that his ERA is pretty bloated right now. I think it's over 5.
Five 25.
Yeah, and he's played in Colorado and Arizona, and those were the two outings where he gave up four home runs over those starts and one over the other 14 innings there. I am not worried about Cueto. I think if somebody's panicking right now, then I would be looking to buy. I don't know if you're concerned, like you were saying, about the lower win total. I never really factor in wins. I kind of think it is what it is, and I would rather play quality starts, whatever you feel about that. But I'd be looking to buy Cueto right now. No problem.
I have no issues trying to buy Cueto because I still think that Cueto is going to give you ace type quality numbers. Obviously, that ERA and the WHIP need to come down, but you know, it's like Evan said, he has had two games against Colorado. He's had a game against Arizona, so giving up four home runs in those games doesn't help his ERA in any capacity. And then obviously, you can get hit to death playing in Colorado. But the fact that the Giants team overall hasn't been perfect, they're an older team, they don't have a great offense, it makes it a little tough for me to totally support Cueto. And also for the fact that I don't know what will happen, because if they start falling out of the race, they could very well look to trade Cueto if Cueto does not think that he's going to be coming back to San Francisco. And because of his player option, he can either leave at the end of the season or he can get locked in for another 3 years. So he may be good and tell them, oh, I plan on coming back, or no, I don't. But the likelihood is that he probably won't, because if at worst he's the number two pitcher this upcoming summer this upcoming winter during free agency, because outside of Jake Arrieta, there's not a ton of other great free agent pitchers. So I could very well see him putting his name inside of the free agency bucket and leaving. So if that's the case, I have no reason to believe that San Francisco wouldn't do everything they can to try to trade him. And the likelihood is that they would trade him to someone in the American League. And we saw what happened when he got traded to the American League a couple years ago, that it didn't have a great effect on him once he did leave. So I'd be a little worrisome that he could end up having a bad second half because of that, but also because the Giants' offense isn't great, and they just lost their best pitcher and probably their best pinch hitter off the bench. I don't know exactly what I can hope for from Johnny Cueto. I think that the numbers will still be good, but I'd look to try to trade him at a top 10 value if I have the ability to do so.
Fun fact, Madison Bumgarner was tied for second on the team in home runs with Brandon Crawford, who hit a just enough homer off Tyler Anderson to left field, which doesn't exactly follow his power profile, and then he hit a pure luck homer off Randall Delgado, and that's hopefully the only time I'll ever have to mention his name on this podcast.
All right, well, why don't we'll clear both my I appreciate those perspectives. Now, why don't we clear both my topics, because I got another one that might not be on the tip of your tongue right now because he's seemingly flying completely under the radar. But going into the season, I had a feeling that Hunter Pence was kind of done, and for being a cleanup hitter in a lineup, he's had time in the lineup without Buster Posey now. Brandon Belt has actually played okay in the middle of the lineup. But my point is that if you could trade for Hunter Pence for, you know, really low value, if you could trade Kevin Pillar for Hunter Pence, would you do that? I mean, how do you feel about acquiring him now? Do you think he's still a cleanup hitter? He could still bounce back. What are your thoughts on Hunter Pence as a value going forward?
Why do you have to jump ahead? Why do you have to jump ahead in the show notes? Like, Kevin Pillar was all I wanted to talk about on the Blue Jays, and you're taking everything.
Well, who's Kevin Pillar?
Well, let's switch. We'll switch Pillar out with someone else. If you could trade Kevin Kiermaier for Hunter Pence, would you do that? But Ben, why don't we start with you? What do you think about Pence?
I mean, I still like Pence. I didn't expect Pence to be a typical cleanup hitter. For the last few seasons, he's not a 25 home run type guy with a 10 steals for the season and like 100 RBIs. He's just not that type of player anymore, and he really hasn't been. I expected Pence to maybe be like 15-ish home runs, chip in a couple of steals, have a decent average provided that he's healthy, and be able to score runs and get close to 80 RBIs on the season. That's kind of what I expected from Pence. And he's not really doing anything so far to make me think that he's not going to be able to do that on the season. I still think that Pence, while he is old and he can get injuries, I still think that he is a decent option for an outfield spot. Now, it really just depends on the depth of your league. In a 10 or 12 team league, I'm probably not looking to acquire him because there's probably going to be other bigger power hitters that can still hit for closer to 300. He's a solid number three, I think, in a 10 to 12 team league. But I think in anything bigger than that, or any league that you may have four outfielders that start for you, he's a player that I'm looking to acquire. So if I have to give up a Kevin Kiermaier to get him, I think I'll do that.
Evan? How do you feel about him?
I think I'd take Kiermaier over Pence, and it's not that I don't like Pence. I kind of like Kiermaier. Steals. Plus, I mean, what, Kiermaier's going to pop you 10 home runs? What percentage chance is it that Pence hits 15 or even 12?
I mean, well, I think he's at one now, so, you know.
So is Kiermaier, but, I mean, you know.
Sarcastic, Evan.
As far as an overall package, I mean, I don't mind Pence, but I think the bigger issue is kind of the Giants lineup as a whole. Nunez has six wipes, and then Belt and Panic have one, and that's it as far as what they're doing on the base pass this year. I had some fun little trivia that the Giants are one of five teams that don't have a hitter on the squad with more than 10 RBIs. If you guys wanted to try and guess the remaining ones, I have those written down. There's five that do not have a hitter with more than 10 RBIs. You guys each get two misses. Chuck, you go first.
San Diego Padres.
No, you were wrong.
They have Will Myers.
Yep.
I was going to say Oakland, but they have Chris Davis.
Three, two.
I don't know.
How do you like the counting, Ben? Chuck, what's your second guess?
Boy, I feel like I need to be right here. How about Minnesota Twins?
No. I don't have to hold up. Yeah. All right, Ben, give me two guesses.
Atlanta Braves.
That is actually one of them.
Is it?
Yeah.
Freeman's got Freddie Freeman's at nine RBIs on the season, correct?
Yeah, with like six or seven home runs. Six, I think.
How many more? We have three more?
Yep, two NL teams and an AL team. And one of these teams I've pissed on all year.
Oh, you piss on every team. That doesn't help. Pirates.
There you go.
And you said there's one more.
There's one in each league. Come on.
I would say the Phillies.
Nope.
Damn.
Okay, you got one more, and then we're moving this along. All over this team, I pissed. Everywhere.
Is it the White Sox?
No. Because Abisail Garcia's actually had a good year. The Kansas City Royals, which I don't know.
Royals or Tigers, I couldn't think.
And the St. Louis Cardinals, actually. That
was my next guess for the National League, so.
Yeah, they've been horrible offensively. Like, Chuck, is there anybody else like that you'd want to even touch on right now with a bat?
Yeah, for the most part, not. But I was surprised to see that, you know, Pence is hitting over 300 and he's got a 372 OBP, which is kind of nice. But he hasn't even attempted a steal, which, of course, is a wee bit depressing. And the counting numbers do look like they're going to take a significant hit. So in like a five outfielder league, if somebody's really down on him for those counting numbers, I would probably be willing to acquire him just because, you know, a lot of the other guys you might be able to trade him for are guys who are going to hit seventh or eighth in a lineup and not have any opportunity to spike with their counting numbers. And I think San Francisco might be a little bit better than they've been so far. I mean, just getting Posey back full time seems like it could help them out a little bit. So, I mean, not that I disagree with you guys, because Pence, 34 years old, he's attempted one steal in the last 2 years.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, if you look at how many steals he's actually attempted over the last seven seasons, he's only tried for double-digit steals three different times. And one of those times was 10 on the dot, and that was in 2011, and that was between two different teams. So, you know, he's not a big runner, but you still expect him to go for a couple of steals maybe, you know. But the thing is the last two seasons he's played 52 and 106 games respectively. You know, you need him to be healthy and being able to produce the numbers, because he's always going to hit for a 275 to 285 average. And he's usually around a 330 on base percentage. But what you try to get out of him is 10 to 15 home runs, and you try to get, you know, about 75 or so runs and RBIs. That's what you're trying to get from Pence. It's nothing flashy, but if he's healthy, it's consistent. And even when he's not healthy, he's still putting up decent numbers. He just needs to be able to put up more. And that's why you're looking for him to try to stay healthy, because when he has, he typically plays around 160 to 162 games. And he had done that basically for three straight seasons prior to 2015. So,
all right, Ben. Why don't we go on to year two? What are you thinking about the Giants?
I mean, it's kind of funny because today they had just brought up Christian Arroyo, and Justin was stating that basically he's a Joe Panic who just doesn't get on base as much, and I kind of agree. He's basically a hit to a guy with no power or speed upside, so I don't really expect much from him. But it really depends on what happens with Eduardo Nunez. Because Eduardo Nunez is playing left field, I believe, tonight as a result of Arroyo being up. And if he's able to gain outfield eligibility, he's the type of player who I'd actually be a little interested in, because if he's able to hit 280, maybe get 5 to 10 home runs in the season, but get 30-ish steals, I think he's going to be valuable, because you can plug him in at so many different places. If you're in a deeper league, you can plug him in corner or middle infield or in the outfield. In a regular smaller league, you can move him around a diamond a lot more easy for off days and stuff like that. So Eduardo Nunez is a player that I'm looking to get regardless of if he gets the outfield eligibility or not, because of what he brings to the table. But he's one of the actual speed players for this team. What are your guys' thoughts? Why don't we start with you, Chuck?
Well, the thing I'd say about Arroyo is, you know, he really ripped up the minors, his average over 400 early on in his minor league season. And the only extra comment I would have, I agree completely about Nunez, is that for some reason, if the bottom does fall out, I've heard people, you know, that are probably being a little pessimistic, saying, you know, at some point this season the Giants could end up 25-45, and you know, that kind of a record. If they get there, they're going to play some young players and see exactly what they have, and you know, spots are going to open up after the fire sale around the trade deadline, etc. So he may be a guy to keep your eye on as far as someone who might have long-term value if he ends up, you know, being their regular third baseman in the years going forward. But other than that, I agree about the fact that Nunez is one of their most interesting and most valuable players, because I know he's been ripping up the base paths already this year.
What about you, Evan? Do you have any thoughts on Nunez or on Arroyo?
Well, Nunez has six steals, but I thought a lot of those came early. I was trying to look that up here, but kind of struggling right now. So we'll just talk really slow and say that I really don't have a lot of Christian.
In the last week, he's had one steal, and in the last 2 weeks,
excellent. Yeah,
he's had three. But basically, he's in the last 14 days, he's only had two. And one of those is on the 14th day. So. Yep.
So he had five of his six steals in the first 10 days, and in the following 10 plus, he's had one. So he's kind of trailed off in that department, but that's the law of averages, and that's what happens.
I mean, to be fair, he has been hitting over the last week. He's only hit 200, and over the last 15 days, he's only hit 227. So he's not getting on base a ton, because of that, so it's causing him difficulty, obviously, to get steals. But they had also been batting him sixth in the order, which isn't the best spot for your best speed guy to run. And I'm kind of glad that Denard
Span
That's the thing. They consider Denard Span a speed guy, and that's why they're putting him at the top of the lineup. But it's a good thing that he's hurt, because it allows Nunez to bat leadoff. And that will actually increase his value a good amount, I think, as long as Span is hurt.
Right. And I don't know about, you know, defensively as far as what Eduardo Nunez really is, but I think, isn't that one of Arroyo's calling cards as well?
Yeah, that's one of his better calling cards. And I think it's good that they're trying to see what they can have, but I just don't think that there's a ton of offensive fantasy value there. And the only reason that Arroyo is getting called up is because Aaron Hill is going to the disabled list. But it will be good to see what Arroyo is able to do at third base. I think he'll play good defense there, but his bat's not going to be anything special. Like I said, I kind of agree with Justin that he is basically a Joe Panic type player without the walks upside. So in an OBP league, he's not going to be as beneficial. His best calling card is a hit tool, and it's a very good hit tool, but, you know, if you're looking for just an empty average type guy, sure, he can be beneficial, but I think they're going to be betting him low in the order six and lower, that his runs aren't going to be significantly high because of who's behind him. He doesn't have a ton of power upside, and while he may get some RBIs because he does hit at a good clip, I don't think that the RBIs and the average is going to be enough to push him to fantasy relevant.
Well, if the Giants' rotation is going to be even worse without Madison Bumgarner out, and I mean, he was really the only thing keeping this thing afloat, because we definitely weren't counting on Jeff Samardzija. But I think, you know, having a defensive mindset might be the best thing for this team going forward until they figure out, you know, what they're doing with their pitching.
But that's the thing, like, their pitching has just done so bad this year. You look at Bumgarner, who wasn't even having a great season overall. Like, sure, he had a three ERA, but his WHIP was 1.25. He was 0-3 on the season. It's good because he's basically getting a strikeout per inning, but his WHIP on the season was 1.07. I was looking at the wrong person. I apologize, but you look at Jeff Samardzija. Jeff Samardzija has an ERA over 7 with a WHIP over 1.5. You have Matt Moore, who is expected to be a good number 4 starter for this team. He's got a 5.87 ERA with a 1.57 WHIP. He's not at a K per inning, so that's not helpful. And then your fifth starter is Matt Cain, and he's got the second best ERA in the rotation at 3.31. And the third best WHIP at 1.41. Like, and Matt Cain has a fastball that's at 89 miles per hour. It's not like he's going to be doing anything. This lineup, or this rotation, is getting killed by the teams that they're playing. And I can understand it, but they're playing so bad on the season. And even Mark Melanson, as Chuck had pointed to earlier, he's got only 4.2 innings at this point the entire season. And he's given up 9 total base runners through 4.2 innings. So that's not overly beneficial when your closer is putting a lot of people on base either. So this entire pitching, rotation, bullpen, everything, it's going very, very poorly. And if they don't right this ship very soon, I can't see this improving at any point. And I see them selling a lot of pieces at the deadline. All right. Evan, do you have any players you want to talk about?
Nah, I think we can move on. I had a team that I was interested in talking in.
Sure,
finished with the Giants. I mean, I was kind of interested in the Mariners going into this year. I did a lot of research on them with the preview pod that I did with Werner and Mr. Tejo Bedecht. And I think if you want to start talking about the Mariners, a guy that you can look at that kind of highlights the struggles that they've had going on this season is Kyle Seager, who is at least walking, even though he's not really hitting any home runs after he hit 5 in every month last year. The Mariners as a team, 22nd in the league in batting average, 12th in OBP. So they know how to take a walk. But Seager's BABIP is actually high for him at 306, and he's only hitting 246, even though he's traditionally not a strong April performer, and he's currently the 32nd third baseman on the player radar. So if somebody in your league is panicking on Seager, like they saw he got scratched from Sunday's game with the hip thing, even though he had a pinch hit, I'd be cool with buying. I don't know how you guys feel about starting there, talking about Mariners bats.
I mean, I'm a big Kyle Seager fan overall. I like how consistent of a player he is in terms of roto standings. I think that he's a player that you can consistently count on to be good in runs, average, and power, basically, throughout a season. Now, it's like you said, he hasn't always had great Aprils, but I do think that he's the type of player that's going to be able to start heating up. And it's been tough for him to get going because he hasn't been getting on base as much, so that's kind of killing his ability to score runs. But then also the fact that Segura hasn't been playing and he's been on the DL, that hasn't helped the top of the lineup. But it's been good that they've had Taylor Motter be able to pick it up. But I think that this offense will keep going as long as Kyle Seager and Robbie Cano are the two players that are producing. And Cano is heating up just a little bit, but we need Seager to come back healthy, and we need him to be able to produce for this offense to really take off, I think. Chuck, what are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts on the Mariners in general are definitely that this is the team that has the strongest chance that we're going to talk about tonight, the strongest chance to bounce back and actually be, you know, in the heart of the playoff discussion by year's end, just because of the nature of the offensive players that they have on their team, and because they have had some encouraging starts on the mound as well. So, but as far as Seager is concerned, I think Seager is, I'm not to the point of worrying about him. I love to see a player whose, you know, OBP is over 360, even though he's been struggling. So that means that he's not pressing, he's not swinging at bad pitches. I think that a combination of Seager and Cruz and Cano and Haniger, who probably won't stay as hot as he's been, but will probably be fine. You get Segura back. Sounds like they're going to be creative on how they're going to handle their first base situation, even though Vogelbach just got called back up. Overall, I think that this is one of the Seattle teams in recent years I actually like. I like more than when Jack Z was running the show there. So I think that Kyle Seager is an excellent buy-low candidate. If somebody is getting impatient with his early season struggles, I would be all about Seager as well.
Well, I mean, the two interesting and definitely hot take names are Taylor Motter and Mitch Haniger. Motter, coming into today, had 13 hits, and 11 of them were for extra bases. So I don't know. He's got shortstop eligibility in a bunch of leagues now. How much playing time he's going to snag going forward. I like him. I mean, Martin's gone. But which guy do you think kind of falls off the table first?
I personally think that Taylor Motter falls off first just because he didn't have a great minor league track record for being able to do what he's doing now. You know, he doesn't have a great average, so if the average falls off, who knows what else will. But he's been hitting for power, and he's been hitting situationally, which has been very helpful for the team. But it is good that Leonis Martin did get designated earlier today, and it could allow him to start seeing some time in the outfield as a result, which should be able to keep his bat in the lineup, which is kind of what you're looking for if you're a Taylor Motter owner. But Haniger is the type of player that should be able to be consistent going forward. He showed power in the minors. He has the ability to get on base, to score a lot of runs. He has the ability to get steals. I don't see anything wrong with his game. I think that he's done a very good job the entire season. And I think that he's going to be as consistent as they can be for a team that's looking to get jump started. And it looks like after yesterday's game, they could easily get jump started and take off. And this is a team that had a lot of people expecting them to be one of the better offensive teams in the American League this year.
One second before we move on to other names, while I have Taylor Motter on the brain, he is seventh in average exit velocity in the league, which is kind of nuts to me. He's got like a 50% hard hit rate behind Sano, Gallo, Miguel Cabrera, Castellanos, Freeman, and Chris Davis. So I don't know if you think he's going to keep that up, but yeah. Who else are we talking about, Chuck? You want to go pitching now, or
I thought that Chuck was maybe going to talk about which player he expected to fall off.
Oh, sorry.
Well, if you, ADD. I do expect Motter to fall off, but I think they're going to get creative in figuring out how to keep him in the lineup until he does fall off. I think you're going to see him get some time in the outfield, and they're talking about playing him a little bit at first base as well, which is part of the creativity that I was talking about. Haniger is obviously a much better long-term prospect because he made some changes in the minors and has made himself into a very good player. So, and like I said, the fact that we're having this discussion about their ancillary players means to me that this is the team that has the best potential to bounce back and get back into the heart of a playoff contention before it's all said and done. So, but I do, on the prompting thereof from Evan, I do find a number of their pitchers to be pretty interesting. And one of them, I think, is Felix Hernandez because of him having over 2,400 major league innings pitched already. They really leaned on him hard. He's got this glistening stat, this 20 strikeouts to one walk so far, but his whip is awfully high for him because he's had a couple of games where he's given up a lot of hits. So Felix Hernandez is a guy that I think is kind of interesting, and I'm wondering if you would bet on him being able to be a top 20 to top 25 kind of starter for the rest of the year. What do you think, Evan?
I mean, I was high on Felix this draft season. The strikeouts are still kind of concerningly low, but I think they're 25 is kind of an interesting range. I'm trying to bring up like the player rater right now and see who is kind of in that range that I would think about kind of trading for. So like, Fulmer's been pitching out of his mind, like a Michael Pineda or Felix Hernandez.
Felix Hernandez every day of the week for me. I think the floor is just so much higher. But
I know Pineda's been a hot name, but I mean he hasn't been, terrible.
Yeah. I would not take that kind of a gamble. The floor is just so crazy low for a guy whose nickname is Pinata. So I don't think I would do that. But there probably are players in that range that I would think about doing it with. In so much as the real question of Felix Hernandez now is how much his upside really is. Does he have the potential to really climb? So somebody like his teammate James Paxton, like you'd think if the real James Paxton was how he was in his early starts, maybe he's as, a top 15 kind of guy. And I kind of don't think that we can expect that anymore out of Felix. So it's a curious question to me. What about you, Ben? What are your thoughts on Felix Hernandez?
I haven't been a Felix Hernandez guy for the last two seasons. And it's mainly because he's just got so many innings on his arm that it makes it tough for me to expect him to do well. Now, he's got a 3.65 ERA, which is great, but his whip is at 4.28. His xFIP is sub-3 right now, and while that's good, I don't expect him to be able to keep the walk rate at 0.36 per 9, which is what it's at right now. He's only walked one person in the entire season, so I expect that to go up closer to the regress to the mean, basically, for his career. So his whip could go up as a result. It puts more people on base, puts him at bigger risk for a higher ERA. And he's just not striking out people at as great of a clip as we're used to seeing from him. He's only striking out 7.3 per 9. So I don't like him as much as other people, and I'd look to try to trade him after one of his better starts, because I think it's better for me to trade him before the potential bottom falls out, and I'd rather have someone else deal with the problem, because I just don't trust him. And I give a lot of leash to a lot of pitchers, whether they're good or bad. I give a lot of leash to them if they're showing me something in the secondary stats, and he's not showing me anything in his that make me want to believe in him.
Well, I do think that's curious and a good take, and I've painted this sort of positive. I want to make one more comment about the pitching that might seem a little off the wall at first. But in this day and age, it seems like teams that are in the playoff hunt, what the one thing they really want to do is they want to get that killer bullpen, that back end of the bullpen, which was on display, obviously, for the Indians in their undermanned run to the World Series last year. So I have this weird theory that I would not want to acquire Edwin Diaz. I wouldn't want to acquire their closer, who actually hasn't pitched great so far, but it's such a small sample. I hate to hold it against him. I mean, he's only 23 years old, and he had 88 strikeouts in 51 and two-thirds last year. But if the bottom were to fall out, if I'm completely wrong on the Mariners and a combination of Iwakuma and maybe James Paxton's closer to what he was his last start, if they, you know, they're using Ariel Miranda, if this does go poorly for them, they don't get Drew Smyly back, etc. I wonder if there's a possibility that Diaz could get traded to someone and not be a closer, meaning that they get such a huge offer and it's still the fact that if you look like you're going to go through any kind of a rebuild, you don't want one of your best players to be your closer. So how crazy of an idea is this that I would not want to acquire Diaz right now because I fear he may not end up closing all year if everything goes the opposite of good in Seattle. What do you think about that off-the-wall theory there, Evan?
Well, I wasn't a big Diaz guy going into the season, and Werner kind of gave me some trash on that preview pod. He's not been good. He's given up 4 walks and not even 7 innings. He gave up 15 all of last year in 51 innings. The K's haven't been there. I mean, that's the thing. If he blows up, at least he's coming back and striking guys out, but he hasn't even necessarily been doing that. And I mean, I'm in a position where I would have to buy him because I don't own this guy anywhere. I was opting much rather to go for a guy like from the Cardinals or, you know, Wade Davis from the Cubs, who are kind of getting drafted in that same round, because Diaz was getting pushed up, you know, top 100 prices I was seeing in some of my drafts for guys that believe the strikeout potential and the growth. But I do think you're right that, you know, the Mariners could fall out, but I think they could just as easily. I mean, I think this is kind of the team you want to make a run with in a division like that. Like, if you're going to make a run, you know, maybe Felix can pull some magic. Iwakuma can be not terrible. 5-run Hisashi Iwakuma and Paxton, who was the other name that we brought up, who has been absolutely ridiculous this year. Like, I was looking at leaderboards and comparing some of his numbers and having some comps, like, he's been really good. I was really wrong on this guy, and I know he's changed his delivery a lot, and I'm still trying to understand all that, but the velocity looks down to me. I don't know if that's just the numbers playing tricks. Ben, do you think Paxton has more than delivered on his draft price and you should sell, or are you hanging on to him?
Well, for me, with Paxton, I think that he's giving you a lot of great value. But the thing that you always have to keep in mind is that he's never made more than 20 career starts in the big leagues. So that's just something that you want to keep in the back of your mind. And at the first sign of trouble, you may want to look to move him, just because if you're in a redraft, you don't know how many starts he's going to potentially get. So you just want to see if there's, you know, if there's like a slight decrease in his velocity, or if, you know, he gets beat up in one or two straight outings, you know, maybe there's something off, because I think that his mechanics are relatively good overall, and that what he's done to try to change his delivery has worked out for him. I think he could end up potentially getting hurt at some point until he proves me otherwise. But with Edwin Diaz, I don't see them really looking to sell, because this isn't like the Phillies when they had Ken Giles and they were multiple years away from competing. This team has other pieces in place that if they do fall off the map this year, they could end up trading some of their other players. But I don't think that they would go full on tank mode because you still have Robbie Cano who's on a big contract. You're not really going to end up trading him. I highly doubt that you end up trading Segura. The likelihood that they trade Haniger at this point seems pretty slim. I don't expect them to go and trade James Paxton either. So they could end up moving Felix. They could move Iwakuma. But I think that Edwin Diaz is the type of player that they look to hold because the potential rebuild that they could have would be more of a retool that the Yankees kind of tried to do something last year, that they get players that could come up with in the next year and help take some of the older players out and give them a new infusion of youth rather than the type of Phillies team that goes and trades Ken Giles for a massive prospect return due to the fact that they don't expect to have a good team for 3 years, so why have a good closer? That's the type of thing that I see it more being like. So that's why I don't expect him to trade Diaz.
Well, there's definitely something to be said for that. But I think we've touched on some important points to think about with the Mariners because there certainly is a ton of potential outcomes with this team right now. There's a lot of questions about their stars being older players and, you know, and the fact of how much depth they have within their roster and how much depth they have in their starting rotation. So a lot of different things can happen. And I think the Mariners are a fascinating team right now. Like I said, if I had to put money on the line, I would say that the Mariners end up being right in the playoff hunt, if not a potential wild card team. So
The player that I would expect the most to look to trade if they were out of it is someone like a Nelson Cruz, who's on the older side, who is a big power bat that can go somewhere else because they have outfield depth in the minors. They have Tyler O'Neill, who's expected to be up this year. They have Kyle Lewis, who's 2 years away, potentially three, but probably closer to 2 years. They still have Haniger. Like I said, Robbie Cano is on a big contract. The likelihood that they trade him is extremely slim because no one's going to want to take that many more years for Robinson Cano, even if he is performing at a high level. The likelihood that someone eats that contract is so slim. So you probably end up having someone, a core of Robinson Cano, Kyle Seager, Gene Segura, and Mitch Haniger all going into next season with a player like Tyler O'Neill coming out, up with a player like Dan Vogelbach being up, with the potential of Kyle Lewis coming up. You know, you have a good enough offense that they don't really need to do anything, but they do need to find a way to build that pitching rotation up, because Felix, if he doesn't perform, and we've seen this, his numbers have gone down. We need someone to replace him, and that's potentially James Paxton, but Iwakuma looks like he's done. His velocity is down, and he wasn't a big velocity guy to begin with. Who knows what's going to happen with Drew Smyly? They have Ariel Miranda as their fifth guy right now. They need some depth in that rotation, so maybe potentially them falling out of it isn't the worst thing, because they could look to move Nelson Cruz and potentially get some decent pitching prospects back. So maybe that isn't the worst thing.
Yeah, like I said, it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out. Now, Ben, why don't you lead the charge in talking to us about the Toronto Blue Jays, the other team we're going to cover tonight?
What, are you bummed about that, Evan?
No. I was just going to – I wanted to mention my boy,
right,
Tony
go,
Zitch.
Go ahead and mention your boy. Go ahead.
Tony Zitch. I love him. If Edwin Diaz goes, he should close. And I think Robinson Cano is doing fantastic things with the pulled ball in the past week. Go check it out. Anyways, continue.
Do you really think that Tony Zitch is probably going to end up closing if they moved Edwin Diaz? That's the player you think that they would peg?
Yes. Who would you peg?
I don't know. I kind of expected them to potentially go with someone like a Nick Vincent. Or I would have, if we were at the beginning of the season, I would have considered Dan Altavilla. I would have considered him, but he's just had such a bad season so far, so I don't know. But I still would have really thought that Nick Vincent would have been one of their go-to guys that they could have considered becoming a closer. They still have Chizik. So theoretically, they could, if they did for some reason move Diaz, they'd probably still use Chizik and try to move him during the offseason. I don't see why they wouldn't do that. It doesn't make sense that they have Chizik just stay in the setup role going forward for another closer. I don't really see that happening.
The one thing about Zich, though, is when they brought him back, they fired him up right away because he pitched three times in 4 days between the 16th and the 19th, coming off of a biceps injury, I believe, or something.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was a biceps injury.
It was something it wasn't his elbow. It was something stupid in his arm. But, yeah, he's just a name that I want to point out. But let's talk BJs. Go, Ben. Blue Jays, don't get your mind out of the gutter.
I think that's going to make the intro right there.
I think that's going to make the intro there too.
Okay, Kevin Pillar is a name that we brought up earlier. Dude's been red hot since he climbed to the leadoff spot, and nobody else on this team with a bat is really worth talking about. So, Ben, what are your thoughts on Kevin Pillar?
I mean, it's nice to see Kevin Pillar over the last week hit 370. Considering that they only have one other hitter who's hitting over 300 who's actually useful. But it will be good when they get Donaldson back. It would be nice to see Jose Bautista actually pick up, you know, his play. But I think that Kevin Pillar has done a very good job being able to ignite this offense hitting at the top over the last few over the last week or so. And it's nice to see that even over the last 2 weeks that he's had the most at-bats. He's hit 315. He's got three home runs, two steals. He's putting himself on base. But the problem is that the Toronto Blue Jays overall are just not performing. And I think that's mostly behind Donaldson being on the DL, Jose Bautista not playing well. And now, not that he's done well, but Troy Tulowitzki's on the bench, or on the DL, and Russell Martin hasn't really performed well at all for the entire season. So I think a massive accumulation of all of those players would only boost up Kevin Pillar's value once they come back and once they start performing. So I think if you have the ability to buy Pillar now, I would, only for the fact that I expect his value to increase even more once people start coming back and once that lineup becomes healthier.
Yeah, I think when it comes to Pillar, I think Pillar and Kiermaier were an interesting comp going into the season, and Kiermaier hasn't played nearly as well as Pillar. And Kiermaier was the one that got sort of the draft helium. There was one drafter in every room that wanted to take a gamble on Kiermaier, whereas Pillar was the one that was falling because last year wasn't nearly as good as he was 2 years ago. But I think he's a huge benefactor of what's been going on within that lineup, in so much as they've needed to move him up in the lineup. And he's surging at just the right time. So I do think he's an excellent candidate right now to pick up any league where you can, or have him get thrown into a trade, because I think he's carving out a role. I don't think Ezekiel Carrera and some of the other pieces that they're using in the outfield, et cetera, are going to stay in his way and are going to be in his way at any point. And so I think he could have an excellent fantasy season. I'm delighted where I own him, even in an OBP league, even though he's not a big walker. As long as his average is good, I still think he's not going to hurt you in any format from here on out. It is curious that he's been caught stealing twice, and he's got two steals. But still, overall, if their team is going to struggle, they're going to be in plenty of situations where he's going to be able to run. So I suspect that he gets to at least 15 stolen bases, which is a huge bonus in this day and age.
I would hope so. He's got half the team steals already. They only have four.
The team's been terrible. Like, of players that have more than 45 plate appearances, Justin Smoke has the second highest batting average on this team. Pierce, Russell Martin, Devin Travis, and Jose Bautista are all hitting below the Mendoza line. And I mean, well below. Like, Pierce is the highest of that group at 167. This team is ice cold.
Well, I mean,
how cold is ice cold?
Like, what's cooler than being cold? We figured it out. What's cooler than being cold? It's not ice cold. It's the Toronto Blue Jays this year.
Well, I will say this. I do think that I do think that Marco Estrada is still someone that I'm happy to be owning. I know he did have one bad start, and I do think that Jay Happ, before he went on the DL, was showing some signs of actually striking some people out. And Stroman's had some good starts. So while I don't believe that they're a team that can come all the way back and be competitive, I do think that there can be quite a few people on this team, Aaron Sanchez included, that could hold quite a bit of fantasy value in the second half. And it may be very much under the radar because the team is unlikely to be in the race by that point. So, and you know, we touched on something else that's interesting. If you could buy ultra low on, if you could buy low on Russell Martin and Jose Bautista, I would still do it because I still think Jose Bautista is still hitting the ball hard and he's in the right division, in the right situation where they're going to have to keep going to him. So I still think I would still take Jose Bautista to hit 25 home runs this year, but that might put me in the minority. So do you think I'm being too optimistic with 25 home runs for Bautista this year?
What do you think, Kevin? It can go either way. See, here's the problem with Bautista. He just doesn't look like he's healthy at this point. That he's just hitting so poorly. And I don't understand really what is wrong that he's just not being able to perform to the level that we kind of had expected. And last year he didn't have a great season either. But he still did hit for some power, but the average was a lot lower than what we had expected. But at the same point in time, he's not doing anything this year that's making me think that he's anywhere close to being able to perform to the level that we're expecting. His slugging percentage is just so far down, and I understand that it's going to go up, but he's just not even producing hits at this point. And I just kind of want to see what he's able to do when he starts stringing some hits together before I make a determination. But at this current time, I'd say it's probably closer to 20 home runs than anything else.
Well, I had posted, I was at work and watching one of the Blue Jays games. I think it was last Saturday. And I posted a screenshot of the pitch that Bautista struck out against the rookie for the Orioles. I can't think of his damn name. But you just look at his plate discipline numbers to start the season. He's been god awful. He's a career 80% contact guy. He's at 68% for the season. Career 86.5% Z contact. So that's inside the zone. He's at 76 this season. He's just been terrible. And he wasn't healthy last year. He was so bad that I remember them saying he couldn't even, run the comb through his hair. He was so damn bad. He's hitting 160 against right-handed pitching. Like, that's disgusting. And you think he can hit 25 home runs, Chuck?
I still believe. I mean, I know that recently it seems like he's hitting the ball a wee bit better. I saw him get robbed on a diving catch the other day. And like I said, they have so much money invested that he's going to accumulate at bats. He's got a very long leash. And when I said, that somebody you'd want to really buy ultra low on, I certainly wouldn't pay anything major for him. But if you were going to speculate on someone who may have a chance to rebound and still be halfway decent, I still think Jose Bautista is in the right situation, in the right division, plays in the right home park, that maybe there's a little bit more reason for optimism than his numbers would suggest right now. So are you guys saying that you would rather buy into Russell Martin rebounding right now, or would you rather buy into Jose Bautista? Which one of those guys would you prefer?
I'd rather buy into a Russell Martin just because nothing that Jose Bautista has done over the last two seasons has really made me think that he's just going to have a full bounce back. And I already expected his potential floor to end up being a little lower because he's the type of player that will get more or to get less time because of injuries than Russell Martin. Now, Russell Martin hasn't been good at all, and we've established this, but at the same point in time, he has the same amount of runs as Bautista right now in 20 less at-bats. He has the same amount of home runs in 20 less at-bats, and he's got 3 less RBIs in 20 less at-bats, and he's still hitting at a better average. I still think that he has the ability to pick it up. I still think Bautista does as well, but for whatever reason, I just haven't seen anything from Bautista to make me think that he's going to make the improvements going forward. So I don't really understand what is causing him to perform so badly this year, but I'd rather stick with Russell Martin.
You agree, Evan? Which one would you prefer?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're talking about buying in on somebody, the price is going to be a hell of a lot lower in a Russell Martin type than a Jose Bautista. And I think, you know, if Martin got turned around at the plate, he could provide an upgrade for what you potentially have at catcher, as opposed to Jose Bautista, who, I mean, I don't think he's going to go back to like 35 home run Jose Bautista, but if, you know, he just goes back to like 17 home run, you know, like Jose Bautista, like you can find somebody else that does that and isn't, you know, 30. How old is he? He's got to be over 34.
I think he's 36.
Wow. 36. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's better plays, I think, than trying to buy on a Jose Bautista.
Oh, that's certainly understandable. And yeah, Russell Martin is 34. So, and oddly enough, I mean, you know, his 310 OBP looks pretty good compared to his 149 batting average. So at least Russell Martin is certainly walking some. So, and replacement value is definitely much, you know, league average replacement value at catcher is a much different story than league average replacement value in the outfield. So, you guys are probably correct. You talked me into Russell Martin, which is good because I own him in a couple of OBP leagues, and I'm hoping that he does rebound as much as we hoped.
Real quick, because I kind of feel this conversation coming to a close, and I'm all about the you know, bringing up stuff that we've talked about in the past. Francisco Liriano, who got, you know, absolutely demolished by the Rays. I recorded one out. He gave up 5 earned runs in the first start of the season, but over the next 12 innings, he only gave up 2 earned runs against Baltimore and Boston. Those were both at home in the Rogers Center. So I don't know how you feel about buying in on Liriano for a guy that, you know, if somebody's looking at his surface statistics, are still a little inflated. I know we had talked about Russell Martin doing him some good, coming back to that pairing. Chuck?
Oh, I do like, for a low-end pitcher, I love Liriano's upside, especially if you need to make up some ground in the strikeouts category, or if you're in a category head-to-head league. He's a guy that can provide you with some big point totals per start. So I do feel like there's enough blow-up in his history that I don't think you want to go crazy on it. But I've been saying this regularly all year that when you get outside of the top 60 pitchers, you're basically rolling the dice every single time those guys go out there. There's such a wide array of outcomes and results that we're seeing deep in the pitching ranks. And like I said, I do think there is some value on this Blue Jays pitching staff. And Francisco Liriano is one of those guys where you can get some big upside results from. For certain, he's had red hot streaks throughout his career. You just have to watch out for the whip, and you have to hope that you have to realize that the floor is especially low for a guy with as much of a ceiling as he has. So I think it's a good point about Liriano, and I think it's a good summary of the Jays pitching staff in general, because there really is a relatively deep staff for a team that's doing this poorly. And a lot of those guys have turned in some good performances, followed by some really god-awful ones. So, Ben, if you had to critique the Jays starters going forward, what are your thoughts on Liriano and some of the other ones?
I mean, I really like the line, the rotation overall, and the fact that Liriano is your number 5, I think that's not a bad thing. And I think he's going to be closer to what he's done the last 2 starts. He'll still give up runs, obviously, but he's closer to the type of pitcher I expect him to be overall in the last 2 starts rather than the first. I still expect him to have around a 4 ERA, but I do think that he's going to have that whip a little bit lower. He's still going to get you strikeouts. J-Hap, I really don't know what's going to happen with him. I'm not at all happy with his injury. The fact that he felt discomfort in his elbow during a throwing session, and he's going to miss another start as a result, I don't like that. That doesn't bode well for him. I'm hoping that he's able to come back at some point within the next month, because otherwise I'm going to be looking to cut him potentially if he doesn't. With Aaron Sanchez, I think that he's going to come back, and I think that he's going to do well. And Marcus Stroman's been, you know, doing the best to carry the load over the with complete games in two of the last three starts that he's had. And Marco Estrada's having another good season. So I'm very happy with the rotation overall. They just need the lineup to be healthy. You know, there's not a lot else that you can say other than Edwin Encarnacion was a big loss. And the fact that Donaldson's down now and that Batista hasn't done well, there's just no offense there. When Kevin Pillar is tied for the team lead in home runs with three, that's a problem. And they need him. They need Donaldson to come back quick, and they need him to be healthy. They need Batista to figure his shit out. They need Russell Martin to figure his shit out, and they need Troy Tulowitzki to come back and figure his shit out as well. So, you know, they have a good rotation, and the fact that the rotation is the best thing about this team right now is kind of sad, because they had a good offense coming into this season, I thought, and they just haven't performed well at all.
Cool. Last thing, over under, how many starts does Matt Latos make this year? Let's make people laugh.
Three.
He's got one.
Three.
I think three is probably the right number, but I'll be slightly more optimistic and I'll say five.
That was kind of the number I was going to throw out there too. It doesn't just make you feel good knowing that still gems like that.
Nope. Not at all. Nope.
Well, like I said, if nothing, we got a laugh out of it.
All right, Chuck, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
I, once again, can be reached at Just Chucking It, and I'm having a pretty good run so far in my of note column each week. The two players that I've highlighted the last 2 weeks are Andrelton Simmons, who hit a grand slam, and Miguel Gonzalez, who is up 12-1 in the game that he's pitching tonight against the Royals. So I've had a pretty good run with that. You could do me a favor and click on over to our Friends with Fantasy Benefits website and leave me some comments and or follow my through Twitter. You can follow a link to this. It's like a little snippet kind of article. It's all, you know, like only a page long with three or four different subjects. So that's basically what I've been working on.
And why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on, Evan?
At EvFWFB on Twitter. Watching baseball, tweeting random comments, drinking beers, and watching the Braves bullpen collapse. And pretty soon I'm going to be gathering some football thoughts as well as we head towards draft season. But the only ball that we care about is round, and I'm, you know, still focused on baseball for sure.
And I can be reached at BBrandsFWFB. Currently, I am just doing this podcast for right now. During the summer, we will be bringing some basketball, fantasy basketball content, so be on the lookout for that. I will be doing some articles for baseball, but outside of that, I'm just going to be looking to enjoy being able to play fantasy baseball, watching as many games as I can, and give us a rate and review. It's always very much appreciated. It helps us go up the ladders in the baseball, the Fantasy Baseball Podcast ranks, so we're always very much appreciative of that. And from the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball season, everyone.